Turn up your volume. Because you're about to listen to The Sick Podcast. The Sick Podcast. With Tony Marinaro.
55 seconds left in the penalty, a minute and 27 seconds left in regulation time. Boston 4, Montreal 3. Lafleur coming out rather gingerly on the right side. He gives it into Lemaire, back to Lafleur. Oh!
The Sickest Montreal Canadiens Podcast.
You're in the bomb!
Sports entertainment like no other.
Rejoins, on lui fait perdre la rondelle, une passe devant. Et c'est la victoire des Canadiens. Ce sera la victoire des Canadiens. Stanley pour les Canadiens. Le 23e de l'histoire.
You found the dogs! John, you found the dogs! He found the dogs!
And all together, they worked a young team to the top. And now, a 24th Stanley Cup banner will hang from the rafters of the famous Forum in Montreal. The Canadiens win the Stanley Cup!
Brought to you by Energy Transportation Group. Driven to be different. LaVie.TV. Embrace your true nature. And Playground, your premier gaming destination. It's gonna be sick.
Marinaro on this Monday, March 25th. It is 10:01 p.m. Now 10:02 p.m. Eastern. Joining me will be Eric Engels of Sportsnet and Sportsnet.ca and Anthony Marcotte from BPM Sport. He is the play-by-play man covering the Laval Rocket. And what a great voice he has. And if you haven't heard him before, I'm going to introduce you to him tonight. He is absolutely fantastic. And, of course, he had a chance to watch David Reinbacher, the Laval Rocket, and all other Montreal Canadiens prospects do their thing over the last 3 days. Two wins in Belleville, one win in Toronto, three games in three nights, three wins for the Laval Rocket, who are chasing down a playoff spot in the American Hockey League. The Sick Podcast is brought to you in part by Energy Transportation Group, named by the Financial Times as one of America's fastest growing companies in 2023, recognized by the Globe and Mail as a top growing Canadian company for 2 years in a row. They work with some of the biggest Fortune 500 companies providing end-to-end logistics services. Join a winning team. Check out Energy's career page for available opportunities. Also brought to you by the guys behind me, brewed in Quebec and a winner of a dozen international awards, La Bite à TB offers quality microbrewery beers made with premium ingredients for everyone's taste. La Bite à TB, embrace your true nature. Also brought to you in part by Playground. Get ready to laugh out loud and enjoy a fun evening with friends. This event promises to tickle your funny bone and leave you in stitches. Don't miss out on the opportunity to laugh until it hurts. Reserve your spot now for a night of nonstop laughter. Playground, remember, it's every Wednesday at 8 p.m. where the jokes fly and the laughs don't stop. Don't miss out on the funniest night of the week at Playground, where every laugh is louder than the last. Also brought to you in part by Accent Insurance Solutions. You know by now that all insurance isn't created equal, and you know where to find the right solution for you. Accent Insurance. Accent doesn't sell insurance. They shop insurance for you to find the right product right on the money, whatever your insurance needs, home, automobile, or business. Call the Accent team today at 514-363-3636 and get the right solution at the right price. Visit their website at accentassurance.com. Also brought to you in part by Manscaped, and I'll talk to you about them a little bit later on. Oh, here we go. Why don't I talk to you about them now? Get 20% off and free shipping with code Montreal at manscaped.com. This St. Patrick's Day, make your little hairy leprechaun luckier than ever with Manscaped. And once again, the promo code is Montreal for 20% off plus free shipping. The St. Patrick's Day Shamrock Shavers, Manscaped. Don't just chase rainbows. Make your own pot of gold. Groom your little leprechaun with the leaders in below the kilt care. Say goodbye to your clover forest when Manscaped's Lawnmower 5.0. That's exactly what it looks like. There you have it. All right. Without further ado, let's bring him in to talk Montreal Canadiens hockey from Sportsnet. Eric Engels, how are you?
I'm good, man. I missed you last week.
Yeah. The feeling is mutual, but I know why you missed me. I know why you weren't on.
Okay, you know I wasn't on, but I mean, I obviously missed you because of all your great qualities.
No, I understand that, but I know why you weren't on, though. By the way, you're getting a little fuzzy. I don't know why.
I am getting a little fuzzy. I see that.
Mm-hmm.
Weird.
Yeah.
Love these technical issues that I can't solve myself.
Yeah. It's all right. We have time here. We have time.
Let me log back out and I'll log back in.
Yeah, you're real fuzzy. Yeah, you're real fuzzy. All right, there you have it. We're off to a smashing start today. Unbelievable. Amazing stuff. All right, okay. It happens, man. It's happened to me. This is technology. This is what it is. Gilles Villeneuve, who I would imagine is not really Gilles Villeneuve, and if he is, that's a really cool name to have. He says, Tabarouette, manque pas de sponsor, mon Tony. No, I have to tell you, we are very blessed. We are very, very blessed. And I thank all of them very, very much. But we're doing well. And they're doing well. We're happy. They're happy. Everyone's happy. We got Eric back. How are you?
I'm good, man. I'm good. Yeah, I was at the general manager meetings last week, and it's part of the reason why I'm not on the road with the Canadians this week. It's actually the longest I've been away from them this season. It feels a little strange.
It was your birthday and you chose to party instead of coming on with me. It was your birthday.
it was my birthday and I was out at about 10 o'clock at night. So I couldn't be with you.
Yeah.
Had a nice dinner with Elliot Friedman, with a couple of our Sportsnet colleagues, but after a long day of work with the GMs, although nobody should be crying for me. It was lovely in Palm Beach, Florida, where we were. But yeah, man,
I got to get Elliot on the Sick Podcast, by the way.
Okay. I'll let him know.
I know he has his own, but, which is very successful podcast called 32 Thoughts. He and Jeff Merrick from sportsnet.ca. It's a great podcast. But he's been on other podcasts before, like another great one, which is Spitting Chicklets. So we need to get him on the Sick Podcast here. We need to make that happen, Eric.
Okay. Maybe we'll do it together.
Oh, that would be amazing. That would be amazing. If you could talk him into that, my friend, then I like you even more.
I'll see what I can do.
It's hard to like you more because I like you a lot.
I know he's a fan of yours, so I think I can't speak for him before I speak with him, but let's hope there's a window that opens up where it makes sense for him, and I'm sure you drop whatever you're doing to make it happen.
So I'll tell you this. I'll tell you something that you already know and everyone already knows, but you know, in our business, and when we talk about insiders and true insiders and breaking stories and coming out with the news first, I mean, Elliot's got to be top three on everyone's list, because, you know, it's debatable, right? There's a lot of real good people in the business.
It pains me to say it because I hate paying him a compliment, but I think he's number one on the list.
Best
in the business, and the guy who does it with the most in the most respectful and in the best, I don't know, everybody who's at the top of our business, I think, is excellent
in that
capacity. But, you know, I'm a little biased working with Elliot. And just he's somebody who I've learned a lot from over the years. Again, I hate saying this stuff because I don't want it to get to his head. But he's as good of a person as I've met in and around hockey, which is filled with a lot of good people. And I think we have a pretty good example of that. Closer to Montreal this year, and specifically this last week without Marty St. Louis, you know, you just see kind of the way the whole hockey world gave Marty his space and let him deal with obviously a serious family matter at home with his son, in which everybody knows now that he's released that statement. And, you know, I think this is a special sport with a lot of special people around. And I'm sure Marty got a pretty good reminder of that with the way everybody respected his privacy and obviously was concerned about him and his family. So happy, so happy to see he's back. A great piece of news.
For those who hadn't seen it before, Eric, and now they obviously heard about it. But once again, let's bring up the tweet from the Montreal Canadiens. They ended up sending out a little statement. Canadiens head coach Martin St. Louis has rejoined the team in Denver and will be behind the bench on Tuesday. That was sent out on X, formerly known as Twitter, at 7 p.m. Eastern. And if you go and you read the article, you will find this. I'll read it out to you for those who haven't had a chance to see it. Marty St. Louis, quote, "Everyone within the Canadiens organization has been very supportive of my wife, Heather, and me, as we fully focused on our son Mason and his recovery from a hockey injury. As parents, nothing is more important to us than our three sons, Ryan, Lucas, and Mason. Mason St. Louis, 16, is the youngest of Marte and Heather's three sons. He suffered an injury while playing in a game for U15 Mid Fairfield, Connecticut. A week later, Mason suffered complications from the injury and was hospitalized. His condition has since stabilized, and he is now recovering at the family home in Connecticut. We appreciate the Canadiens organization, our fans, and the hockey community for understanding and supporting us through Mason's injury and recovery. I would like to extend a special thank you to the doctors and nurses that cared for him during this time. I'd also like to thank everyone for respecting my family and our privacy. And I ask to please maintain a focus on the Canadiens team and the remainder of the 2023-24 season, which we will do. All right. So I know that some people, for what it's worth, were waiting for some kind of statement. And there you have it. And that's what it is. And, you know, we knew that it was serious. And good for Marty for actually leaving the team and, going to the going to his son and to his wife and to his family who needed him. All right. OK. Last night, let's start with last night and 5-1. They chased Grubauer in the first period. They got to him fast. They got to him early and they got to him often. So many things we can take out of last night's game. I think so many storylines, but I mean, the one that really, I mean, that's a highlight reel goal from Mike Matheson. It's not the first he scored as a Montreal Canadian, and I don't think it's going to be the last, but we, you know, for whatever reason, Matheson gets some heat from certain people in this city or certain people that cover the team or watch the team or even fans on social media. I read it sometimes. I find it mind-boggling. Of course, he's not perfect. Nobody is. Mike Matheson's amazing. It's amazing.
He's a damn good hockey player, and he proves it every night. And I don't really care what his plus-minus says. It's a function mostly of being on the ice for, you know, 26 minutes a game and at times 30 minutes a game and playing with a team that isn't very good. It's a function in part to all the games the Canadiens have been in that have been one-goal games in which he's been on the ice for empty net goals against because he would be on the ice for the final 3 minutes of a game they're chasing by a goal. And it's a function of the beginning of the season, which Mike Matheson admittedly was not on top of his game and managing risk the way he feels he should. And, you know, there are still going to be parts of every game that he plays where you're just like, I don't know about that decision he just made. But I always say this, like the thing about a player like him is he's not perfect. The key is he mitigating his deficiencies? And when you say he's amazing, I think what makes him so is his ability to not only mitigate his deficiencies, but make them almost irrelevant with how good he does on the other side of things. And maybe people will never see that. Maybe people will never agree with that. I know that Canadiens and their management, you know, at times have viewed him as their best player this year and certainly through parts of last year. And I think as this defense matures and gets better, he's going to probably fill a role that he's probably better suited to. And that doesn't mean he can't be a number one in this league. I think on a really good team, he'd still be a strong competitor to be a number one. But if he was a number two or number three on a team that's maturing and growing and getting better down the line when potentially his contract comes up, the value that he could provide would be enormous. And that's why I keep saying, you know, for everybody who wants to trade him out of town and everybody who thinks that it's a foregone conclusion that as they make room for their younger players, there won't be room for Mike Matheson here. I'm not saying that it's guaranteed that won't be the case, but I would think twice about letting a guy like that go.
So Paul Antoniadis, and Paul is a good friend and, you know, usually hosts me to a Habs game once or twice a year. And, Paul, I will see you at in Laval on Friday night because I'm going to be there. And more on that a little bit later on when Anthony Marcotte joins us. But Paul says, which people are this that don't think that Matheson's amazing? Well, just take a look at what's going on YouTube Live right now. Darth Donger says minus 31, Petrie better than Matheson. I find Matheson
minus 27 because he was plus 5 last night, by the way.
Yeah. Steve Daniels says, Eric, you don't care what his plus minus is. And so there's always comments about Matheson.
Yeah, I don't care. By the way, I want to respond to that. I don't care because it's not a representative stat of his actual play. It's not to say that he's been so good that he should be plus 30. I also posted a thread, I think it was about 2 weeks ago on X, explaining his defensive numbers in detail from Sport Logic, which show that for anybody who thinks he's a defensive catastrophe, he's in the top percentiles of the league in, you know, whether it's stealing pucks or breaking up passes to the slot or all kinds of defensive metrics that show you may not consider him to be the best defenseman in the world. But to sit here and say that he's defensively deficient is just not true. It's not accurate just watching the games, and it's definitely not accurate looking at the data. So is he perfect? No. But the people that look at his plus minus and base their evaluation purely on that, I mean, obviously that's majorly flawed logic, and you could apply that to pretty much any player you look at with that statistic. You play on a really good team and play a lot of minutes with a team that owns the puck and scores a lot of goals, your plus is going to go up. When you play on this team and you're down in the most one goal games in the NHL and you're chasing the game constantly and you're on the ice for empty net goals, your plus minus is going to go back. And Mike Matheson himself, as I just said, he acknowledged his first 10-12 games of the season, he made a bunch of decisions that certainly contributed to the number that we saw. So I'm not saying it's not representative at all, but it's not the top statistic I look at to evaluate a player because there's a lot of other context involved in plus minus.
But Eric, here's another example of, I'm so happy that Marty St. Louis is the coach of this team, because I'm going to tell you right now, over the last 20 years, the Montreal Canadiens have had some coaches that some of them would have changed Matheson's game. Some of them would not give Matheson the green light. And it looks like Matheson kind of has the green light all the time. That's just the way he thinks. It's just the way he plays. Some of you are going to disagree with it. The Canadians are in a rebuild. You know what? Give me someone who's going to give me some excitement. Paul Antoniadis is a Montreal Canadian season ticket holder. He can tell you right now, when you start spending $500 a night on a pair of tickets and parking and a beer or two, you're going to want to see Matheson carrying that puck the way he does. By the way, one aspect of his game, which is incredibly underrated, but I think you outlined it by bringing up some of those defensive metrics in takeaways and stripping pucks and picking up pucks, is his sense of anticipation is off the charts. His sense of anticipation is off the charts.
He blocks a lot of shots too. Like he's nobody's here to argue that he's the best defensive player in the world or that he's one of them. Like, that's clearly going to be the part of his game that is lacking versus what you see from him offensively. The other factor is, like, if you put this guy next to an absolute stable rock, like the type of player that, if everything works out well, David Reinbacher could eventually be, I don't think we'd be talking about his plus minus in any type of negative light, pardon the pun. Like, I just think, you know, you look at Caden Gooley, who's really on his way to becoming a number one, number two defenseman that could play on any team in that role. But he's 108 games into his NHL career, I think. Like, you put a defensive rock, a guy like David Savard, who's like 5 to 6 years younger than David Savard, who's picked up 300 games of experience, next to a guy like Mike Matheson, you have an elite number one pairing. You know, if Jacob Trouba were Mike Matheson's defense partner throughout the year and the Canadians were a good team, you know, it's a lot of if and were and what, but you get the picture. Like, anyways, I don't think we're ever going to change the minds of people who believe a certain narrative about this player. All I could say is this: for the people that are out there starving to trade this player and capitalize on what his value is now versus what it'll be later, and bringing players like Brendan Gallagher and Josh Anderson into the equation and what the Canadians should learn from that. And his best asset is his skating, and it is not about to fall off a cliff between now and when his next contract expires. And properly slotted and on the right deal, there would be, in my opinion, more value in potentially bringing him back at that point than there would be in letting him go or trading him. So we'll see. We'll see what develops. There's a lot of time between now and then, even though it seems short with 2 years.
Listen to this message by Tony Prigioniero on YouTube Live. And thank you all for watching live on YouTube Live, on Facebook Live, on Twitter. Retweet our show on Twitter if you can. Subscribe to our YouTube channel if you're not watching on YouTube. Tell your friends about it. Leave us a 5-star review on Apple. It really is our way of feeling the love when I see these numbers and we see these reviews. But Tony Prigioniero says, Paul Coffey was an incredibly talented elite player, but defensively was very mediocre at times. Not every defenseman has to be Serge Savard. But think about what he said. At times, and there's other times when in one of the biggest games Canada has ever played, if memory serves me well, Canada Cup 1984, if memory serves me well, Canada versus USSR in the semis, if memory serves me well, the game is in overtime, and if memory serves me well, USSR is on a 2-on-1 with Paul Coffey as the lone defenseman back, and his sense of anticipation picking off the pass with a poke check, going down the other way, gets the puck in their zone, a wrist shot from the point, deflected over, I think it was Mishkin, by Mike Bossy. Game-winning goal, Canada win, and they go on to play in the final in what was a two-game series, and they beat Sweden in the final. Both games, game one and game two, and they win the 1984 Canada Cup. I remember that like it was yesterday.
Yeah, listen, I think the comparison is only justified in that both players need to play with a certain level of risk that most other players can't take on in their game. You know, when you have that level of ability, your margin is a bit wider. And unfortunately, when you have that level of ability and a bit of a wider margin, when you step in it, you're really going to step in it. Like the mistakes are going to look quite glaring and quite ugly and often result in plays that really cost you. That's something that Mike Matheson is going to have to deal with throughout his career, no matter how much he gets better, because his ability to take a risk and have it pay off is a lot higher than a lot of other players. Like, I watch this guy practice every day, and certainly watching him in the games at the Bell Center from the bird's eye view that we're advantaged with in the press box.
Yeah.
There are things this guy can do that when you say he's amazing, I think that's really what you're tapping into. There are things that this guy can do that there's, you know, 10 players in the world that are capable of doing those things. His skating is such an elite talent, but his hands and his ability, his poise, his ability to make moves, it forces him to take on a level of risk to take advantage of his ability. And Marty Saint-Louis understands that. You tapped into something smart there. He understands that and understands what it can do for his team as much as it can potentially cost them at times. And you just hope that Mike finds the best balance on a nightly basis and finds consistency. But I'll say, I think the first 10, 12 games and where his game has come from since then, there's been a much stronger, more consistent level of play from him where that risk has been somewhat mitigated. He still had a couple of decisions, whether it was in 3-on-3 overtime or whatever it is, that cost them a goal.
Yeah.
Like, it's just going to happen. Like, that's, you just have to live with that when you see what that guy can give you.
Yeah. So Mike Matheson was acquired by Kent Hughes, of course. Matheson, a former first round pick, 23rd overall. And another guy that Kent Hughes acquired is Alex Newhook, a former first round pick, 16th overall. By the way, do the exercise, out of all the players that Kent Hughes picks up, he likes to go after former first round picks. All right. Kirby Dach obviously is another one that he went after, who was a former first round pick. And there are others too. I'm forgetting one that that he went after that he acquired, who was a former first round pick. Let me see, who am I thinking of? Justin Barron. Okay, Newark. I want to talk to you about him. Two goals again last night. His points per game is very much superior to what he had last year with the Colorado Avalanche. Kent Hughes took some heat by some when he gave up two draft picks. What was it, the day before or the day of or the day before of the draft? A lot of people said, why would you do that? Why wouldn't you hold on to those picks? You probably could have drafted a better player than Alex Newhook, or maybe there would have been a better deal to be had at the draft that night. But you know what? This guy is showing. This is another good acquisition. This kid can play. He can play center. He can play wing. He can play power play. The kid's got speed. Big game for him. The kid can play. He's doing well this year.
Yeah, listen, I did a one-on-one with Kent Hughes last week where we talked about Newhook in detail and, you know, him saying that I've known this kid since he was 16 years old. And it's much easier to identify holes in a player's game when they're 16 years old in junior or 18 years old in college. You know, going to Colorado where there was no room as on a Stanley Cup contender to have those holes be pervasive, so obviously didn't put him in the best situation to succeed. Could understand the skepticism in Hughes trading two picks to get him, a first and a second. So those are valuable assets for a team in a rebuild. But he fit the age profile of the core Hughes is looking to build and have grow together. And Hughes knew him well enough to know, okay, chances are his best hockey is in front of him, and we can probably get that out of him playing under Marty St. Louis with a guy like Adam Nicklaus around and getting specialized coaching and in a place where he can afford to make a few mistakes along the way as he builds out his game. I see, and Kent certainly said it himself in my interview with him, that he's playing really good hockey and the best hockey he has played in an environment where he's being permitted to really grow and learn, which wasn't, you know, it's not a knock on Colorado. It's just where they were at in his development. He still picked up a few things while he was there. There's no question, because the Alex Newhook that came here from early on in camp, you could see there was a certain level of detail in his game that wasn't there while he was in Colorado. Like, you could see that emerge because of the lessons he learned there. And then he gets into a place where that ability is going to be nurtured. Now, one of the biggest things that people should be encouraged about when they watch Alex Newhook play right now and the way he's produced, which I think is, if I'm not mistaken, he's got 10 points in his last 14 games. You could check that. I mean, it's somewhere close to that. And this is coming off of, like, he missed the first three games that he was back. I think he didn't hit the score sheet, but he was generating a ton of chances. But he missed like 12 weeks with a high ankle sprain. And look at who he's playing with. Like, and that's no disrespect. Yoel Armia has been really solid and consistent for over 3 months now. Joshua Hua was showing that he's a talented player who certainly has a future with the Canadiens and probably in their top nine. But if Newhook is doing this with those guys, there's some justification in the thought that he could potentially be not only a complement to the top six moving forward with a guy like Doc back and healthy and potentially somebody else coming in, whether he's drafted or traded for, that bolsters the top six. He looks like a guy who could legitimately play there. And it's not just that shot that he took. It's the detail in his game, the competitiveness. The competitiveness really stands out to me. Like, he plays with an edge. He's not afraid out there. He's not sitting on the periphery. He's in the mix and in the middle, and I think he's growing as a player, and there is potential that it could be a good move. I understand the skepticism when the deal was made. People were really skeptical when they traded for Kirby Dach, and look at what they say about him now. So you can just give it time with players this age. I think Hughes took a gamble, but one that he felt comfortable with given how well he knew the player.
So it's an interesting thing you talk about when you say that he can fit into the top six. I wouldn't be surprised if he's going to be in the top six for the next year or two. Mm-hmm. And then at one point he settles in slotted as a third line centerman when this team is really,
really competitive.
Honestly, you, we'll like,
see. That could 4-year deal. We'll see what. It, yeah.
Like what if that happens next year? What if they hit it out of the park this summer, one way or another? Whether it's they're able to draft someone in the top five, and they're able to acquire someone via trade. And what if, just for argument's sake, because we don't know that this will happen, but what if next year their third line is Newhook, Kawhi, and Armia? We're talking about a very different team if that happens, right? Like if they get two guys,
Josh Anderson. Talk,
what's that?
Where do you have Josh Anderson?
I'd have him playing with Jake Evans and Brendan Gallagher if he's not traded in the summer. You know, I think a lot of people. I know.
Who's
going to
take him?
I know.
Who's going to hold on a sec?
No one at full price. No one at full price. Let's be real.
No.
I'm with you. I'm not sitting here suggesting he's going to be traded. I'm not saying he's going to be traded.
We hello? Yes. Hi. Hi. It's Tony Marinaro. Yeah. Yeah. Is this the general manager of the Cobras of River Rats of Park Ouellette Ville LaSalle? Yes. Okay. Yeah. We have a trade. Would you be interested in Josh Anderson?
Okay. Let's enough with the Connery.
Park Ouellette Cobras just hung up on me.
Enough with the Connery. Listen, I'm not sitting here suggesting he'll be traded. And if he ends up on the fourth line with Gallagher and Evans, that'll be an expensive fourth line for sure. But I'm just spitballing in terms of like what it would mean for the team if they were in that type of position. I'm not saying that they can get there, but the idea that they could add two top six forwards this summer is not extremely far-fetched, and you figure out the rest. Nobody's taking Josh Anderson as a $5.5 million earner. You're going to have to get pretty creative on that if you want to get him moved. I don't think it's impossible to move him. Gallagher is a different story. He's here, and they're going to have to get more out of him while he's here. So we'll see. Yeah. We'll see. There's a lot of things that could happen this summer, and there's a lot of, and that's not just exclusive to the Canadians. That's like all around the league. But don't radio me saying, "Oh yeah, they're going to trade Josh." Like I don't. I wouldn't bet on Josh Anderson getting traded, but I don't think it's impossible.
No, but I could radio you as saying that Christian Dvorak's going to be the 13th forward next year because he's
movable.
We didn't mention him.
He's got 1 year left on his
deal. He is movable. He is movable. Yes, he's movable.
We'll see. We'll see what happens. Like it's too early to get into now, although it's part of our job to project and look into the future.
Yes.
I'm just making an open-ended statement. Like, if the Canadians find a way for their third line next year to be Alex Newhook, Yoel Armia, and Joshua Hua, that's gonna be a pretty good sign that you could make a bet on them going a lot further than we're slated to go this year.
Love Joshua Hua. By the way, because it's our job to project, I will project, and I can tell you now. I've said this before, but for those who weren't listening, I'm going to say it again. You can write it down. Monday, March 25th. 2024, between now and the trade deadline, Yoel Armia, Christian Dvorak, and David Savard will be moved. I know you might disagree on Savard. We've had that conversation before, but that's the way I see it. Okay.
I disagree. I disagree on Armia and Savard.
Wow.
And that's,
you don't think they're going to,
but that's,
you don't
that's
think they're,
in terms of guaranteeing it, in terms of guaranteeing okay. it. Yeah, I would disagree. Because I think if the Canadians are in a place where they're competitive, I don't think Kent Hughes will have any qualms about letting those contracts expire naturally and taking it from there. I don't think he'll have any concern about that at all.
I don't know about the asset management on that one, though. You can have something.
He's been fine with asset management. At a certain point, Tony, there will be circumstances where you have to just let a player play out his contract. And like, if you're in a position where you're competitive enough to make the playoffs and those guys are a part of it, they're going to be more valuable to the Canadians than they will be picking up a third or fourth round pick. Like that's what it comes down to for two players that are making 3 points. I'm not saying that they won't be traded. I'm not saying that we won't get to a point next year where your prophecy comes true, but I will tell you that if they're in a playoff position heading into the deadline, and those two guys are a part of it, I would suggest there's a strong possibility that Kent Hughes will just say, okay, like we'll take what they're giving us. That's more valuable than a third or fourth round pick, and we'll let them expire. And maybe we'll bring one of them back on a lower deal or whatever it is, or maybe they'll just walk. Like, that's okay. Not everything is about asset management. And that's the answer he gave me when I asked him at the trade deadline. Not everything has to be about that. At a certain point, the proposition where the value to your team is potentially greater than what it is on the market, you hold, even if it means you lose those guys for nothing. Because what's it really worth to you to add another fourth round pick for a player that could be helping you for 2 months?
Anthony Marcotte, BPM Sports, play-by-play man for Laval Rocket Games coming up in about a minute or two. Anthony's been waiting, and I appreciate that, to talk to us about David Reinbacher and some of the other Montreal Canadiens prospects. Very quickly, though, in about a minute here, Eric, Habs versus the Avalanche tomorrow night, going up against Jonathan Drouin, who played probably his best game of the season last game. He was absolutely unbelievable. But what a season he's having. Eric, I can't say I'm surprised. I mean, when a lot of people were saying Drouin is not going to find the team next year, I said, you're always going to find one team will say he's still young. Montreal is a certain kind of situation. Let's see what he can do in our team. I figured it was going to be Colorado, and I figured he was going to put up points with Colorado, and he has. But it just goes to show you that Montreal isn't for everyone, huh?
Well, the situation he was in Montreal certainly wasn't for him. I mean, and that's just, unfortunately, the reality. I thought there was great potential for him to be a good player here. I thought he showed he was at times, but obviously not often enough. And it was time for a new opportunity, and he's lucky he got one based on how things went here. Joe is a passionate guy. He was great with us, even in the most difficult of times, and I wish him nothing but the best. I'm happy to see him doing well. I think he's in a place where he's been set up for success, but it's up to him to be able to make that happen and manifest it. So good for him. And, you know, if you're just looking at the game in general and the Canadians playing against him and a Colorado team that is, you know, seriously built and was very much bolstered, I thought McFarland did a fantastic job at the deadline with the assets he had at his disposal to improve his team, which wasn't much. And he made some moves that can really help them. I think if on the Montreal side, going into that game, you're looking at it like, they'd be justified to be tired at the end of this trip through Western Canada and Seattle, and they're getting a big boost up back on the bench. Like I said, super happy to see Marty St. Louis back there for the man. Yeah. You know, we deal with him, we're professionals, reporters, but like, you know, obviously the last 8-9 days, like anybody else in the province, have been super concerned for him and his family, that knowing,
of course,
whatever he was dealing with, it was serious enough for him to be away from the Canadians.
For sure.
So I think if the Canadians were hoping for some sort of boost of energy at altitude in that arena against a great team, they've got one right back on the bench for them. And I think it should produce a good game after a bit of a sloppy one in Seattle.
Yeah.
Wasn't a great game in Vancouver. They played phenomenal in Edmonton. One of their most thorough games of the season. They deserve better in Calgary too. So, hey, I expect we're going to see a good hockey game tomorrow, and no matter what happens, really happy for Marty.
Enjoy it. Talk to you next week, my man. Cheers.
Take care.
All right. I'm bringing him in for the first time here on the Sick Podcast. I absolutely love this guy. He has so much passion and so much energy, and you can imagine I like people like that. From BPM Sport, Anthony Marcotte. Comment ça va?
Really good. Oh, happy to see you, Tony. We're used happy to see each other at TVA Sports each Monday for the last couple of weeks, so you were really missing me.
Yes, I definitely have been, and thank you for staying up this late to do this, but it looks like it's a night on the road for you, eh? Where are you right now? Are you in Utica?
Yeah, I'm in Utica, New York, and I have a good one for you, Tony, first of all. We're in the Delta Hotel in Utica, okay? And it's not a really busy night for hotels in town. But you know that in 2 weeks will be the Women's World Hockey Championship here in town. So our best female players in the world are coming here to play the championship. But there's a team already in town. They are from China. So we're in the same hotel. There's only hockey players in our hotel. There's the Laval Rocket and the China women's hockey team. So I'm crying. In our corridors here, there's only women's that play hockey for China. So I thought it was a great story to share.
It's a pretty cool story. Listen, you had a great look and a great eye on David Reinbacher over the past several days. Man, what a three-game stretch for the Laval Rocket. We've talked about their playoff push. For those who are not aware, Anthony, tell everyone watching right now and some who will be listening tomorrow or maybe even the day after what the reality is for the Rocket right now, where they stand and where they need to be to get into the playoffs.
Well, as of now, they are in the picture. They're fifth in the North Division. You need to finish in the first five positions to clinch a spot in the playoffs. But positions four and five will face each other in a 2 out of 3 playoff series to get in the real picture of the playoffs. And then you face the first position in the playoffs in the section, and then it's a 3 out of 5 series. But playoffs are playoffs. You get in and you never know what can happen, and the Rocket are right in it right now with 9 games to play. It's a battle between positions 3 to 7. They're all in the picture as of yet. Nobody's getting eliminated as of now, and Wednesday's game in Utica will be really important because Utica are 5 points behind. They're playing their season against Laval, so it's really going to be interesting on Wednesday.
David Reinbacher didn't only play his first 3 games in North America, but in game 1 on Friday night in Belleville, he actually scored a big goal to tie the game at 2. This is what it sounded like on BPM Sport with Anthony Marcotte doing the play-by-play.
On a qui revient, on va rencontrer Perrault, il perd rapidement. Reinbacher intervient devant Saunier. Quelle fin, 2 contre 1! Reinbacher et le but! David Reinbacher vient faire 2 à 2! Et quel jeu pour Reinbacher! Bienvenue en Amérique du Nord, David Reinbacher, qui est l'égalité à Belleville! Et quel but pour le 64! Wow!
So we could feel the emotion, but talk to me about just the way you saw that goal and what you thought once he scored it.
Well, I see a player that is playing on his toes and that wants to make a difference. I was really impressed with what he decided to do on that play. Sees his opportunity. What a deke to get himself a scoring chance on 2-on-1, and he decided to shot. So I see a confident hockey player, only 19 years of age, still on jet lag, getting in, playing his first game in North America, first real game here. Tremendous. And these are the goals that you want to get right on air. And I was really proud of how the way it sounded, because it was unexpected. But it was great to see.
Those are pretty good hands, the way he was able to drag that. Eh? He didn't look like, some people talk about, well, he's going to be a defensive defenseman. Some people say, well, he'll be on a second pair. But that's a special play from a player who looks like he's got the potential to be a special player.
I think so. It's still really early. We'll see how the kid will react down the stretch, but I didn't feel him intimidated whatsoever by his new situation, getting in a new dressing room with new teammates, another system to play, shorter rink, less space on the ice. He even got physical with Bokanji Imama on Friday night, so you can tell that the guy won't back down against anyone. So that's another good thing that I saw this weekend, is a guy that's pretty tall, physical, and he hasn't grown in his body. Still rooms left to grow for him. So that's a really interesting project, and he looks really legit out there.
I got the box scores here, but unfortunately, the AHL, you don't see the time on ice, right? They don't show you, but that... On Friday, it's a 3-2 win in overtime in Belleville. On Saturday, it's a 3-2 win in Belleville again. And on Sunday, it's a 4-1 win in Toronto. I would imagine you have an idea. How much time on ice did he have in those games?
Well, on Friday night, William Trudeau went down for an injury. I think there was only 5 minutes left in the first period. So the Rocket finished the game with only five defensemen. So for sure, on Friday, he played over 20 minutes. Had a few moments on the PK as well in the three games. Trudeau came back the next day and he played the remainder of the weekend. So it was basically the same pairings until the end of the weekend. So maybe just a little under 20. So on the third pair, but I think Kelly Buckberger just is moving his pairings out there and he has regular ice time on the PK. We didn't see him in the power play. That's Mayhew's and Barron's responsibilities. I don't expect him to see him in the power play until the end because I think we have two pretty good options right now and these guys know the system and how the power play goes. But if Reinbacher is still the reliable guy that we saw this weekend, it clearly improves the team for sure.
But to be on the penalty kill when his first steps in North America and some of his first games here, that's a huge vote of confidence.
Yeah, no, for sure. And it's still a development league. I know people wants to see the Rocket making the playoffs, and it's perfectly understandable. But each and every time that we're talking about the kids in Laval, it's always on a developmental basis. They always say the same thing. JFL says the same thing. And when we hear Marc Bergevin or now can't use, it's always development. So he will play and he will get his responsibility. If they think that the kid is ready to get a little more responsibilities and more ice time, I'm pretty sure that they will give it to him.
I like that you're going down that path, and I'm going to tell you why. Some have said if the Laval Rocket don't make the playoffs, JF Houle could be in trouble. And, you know, I understand the notion of it because he was not hired by this management team. Having said all of that, the number one mandate, and Marc Bergevin said the same thing when he was general manager, look, in an ideal world, Laval makes the playoffs and the players are developing and they make the playoffs at the same time. But if you have to choose between one or the other, and it's true that playing playoff games goes a long way and helps in your development. That's true. Yes. And you want them to have that experience. But, you know, if there's one thing that you have to look at more than anything else is, are the players progressing down there? Are they becoming better players? And are they ready to get called up to the big show? And when they are called up, is the transition easy for them? Are they able to just kind of like fit in like a glove? And that's what JF Houle's number one responsibility is. And I have to say this. Some people might not be enamored with what the results have been this year or maybe some of the games or, you know, whichever way they play. But I'll tell you this. The players that come up from Laval, they look pretty good. Joshua Roy, Arber Jacki, Caden Primo came up, obviously started the season with Montreal. But, you know, there's guys that have come up that have looked pretty good.
How about Alex Belzile last year? Raphaël Harvey-Pinard as well. They both look good.
Yes.
You're right. There's two things I want to add on JFL's resume with Laval and Montreal organization.
I like Gignac too, by the way. I thought he did well with the Canadiens.
Absolutely. Yeah, what a season he's having. He's still really good in Laval, though. On JF's case, in Montreal, they decided to change the coach. JF stayed there in Laval. They basically changed the whole system up front. Defensively, they play man-to-man. So JF needed to adapt himself to what Martin is doing now in Montreal. So it's a brand new system for himself that he needed to adapt to his own team. So that's a thing that they needed to adapt. And unfortunately, at the beginning of the season, even though there was a lot of expectations in Laval, it didn't start on the right foot. There was an adjustment period, and it was a much more younger team this year. Crazy. Lots of turnovers on the roster. New rookies that needs to adapt themselves to a brand new caliber of play, playing against men. So there was a little period of time where they needed to get through it. They did it until December, paying their dues. But now they're a much better team since December, and they're right in the thick of it now.
Now, there are two players that haven't shown me either enough in Heinemann's case and haven't shown me anything in Yolonen's case. Those two players, I was hoping to see a little bit more. Mind you, the sample size with Heinemann has not been very big. I believe he's got a chance at the big club next year. We'll see what happens. Yolonen, unfortunately, has not passed the test. So I'm going to ask you about a couple of players. And I'll get back to Reinbacher in a second, but Heinemann. So I'll name a couple of players, and you'll tell me the first thing that comes to your mind and what you're seeing and your thoughts on them. Heinemann.
Well, Heinemann is big. He's physical. And he has a legit NHL shot. That's for sure. So he could be a weapon to be used, to be used on the power play. Can he play there in the NHL? I'm not really sure, but he has the shot to do it at least. So he could be a third-tier option for a team that looks to a winger to help on the power play if there's a few injuries. I think he has a kind of game that suits well on the fourth line. So I think he has a chance to make it. But I don't think this year when he had the chance to play Montreal, I didn't think he was really good. But right now, I think he's adapting it pretty good. He's always a threat to score in the power play. And the organization doesn't have a lot of players that looks like him right now, ready to play. Plug and play, you bring him and he plays on the fourth line and he could be reliable. So I think the guy has a chance for those reasons.
Sean Farrell, 25 points in 38 games.
Yeah, he's a small player, gifted offensive player, good vision. He got injured twice this year, long-term injuries twice. So he basically missed half a season. I think it will be a longer-term project than they thought at the beginning because he had quite a few experiences before, played with Harvard, tremendous success in Ivy League. And then he played with the U.S. National team in the Olympics. So he was a guy that was put in an important situation early in his life, but the transition hasn't been easy. But I see real potential for the NHL, but it's going just to be a longer-term project for him. And I think it will be good for him to come back next year. He will know his environment, getting back stronger. And another season in the AHL will do wonders for Farrell.
I don't think he's got a chance to make the team out of camp next year because Christian Dvorak will be back at center ice and so will Kirby Dach, unless, of course, Dvorak is moved in the offseason. But if Dvorak is moved next year before the deadline, does Elias Andersson have a shot of being called up and playing center for the Montreal Canadiens in about a year from now?
I don't expect him to see him back in the organization because they didn't even try him at center all year. He played on the wing all year in Laval. So he wasn't really an option when they needed a centerman in January or February. I never thought about Andersson because he was not playing center in Laval. And they didn't call him. He's going to be a restricted free agent in July. I don't expect him to see him back. Good player, though.
Yeah, he was...
And he's going to be an important factor until the end of the season in the playoffs. He's on fire right now, playing really good offensively with Philippe Maillet. And I don't see opportunities for him, especially on the wing with a guy like Joshua Roy looking for a spot next year.
Logan Mailloux, game-winning goal on Friday night. The stats are pretty impressive of what he's been able to do offensively. We've heard that his defensive game could be come see, come saw. But look at these stats. 14 goals, 28 assists, 42 points in 63 games. At just 20 years old, I think these were kind of the last time a Montreal Canadiens defenseman had stats like this at the American Hockey League level. Or just a little bit better, I think, was what was PK Subban?
That's right.
Pretty good stats.
In 2010, PK, they were playing a 78-game season in the AHL at that time. but they pretty much have the same ratio point per game in a regular season in the AHL. So that's pretty good territory. But the big difference between these two, Subban ended the season at plus 46, and Mayu is around even right now. So you can see that Subban was probably better in his own zone than Mayu is right now. It doesn't take away anything from Mayu and what he's doing right now. I think his improvement has been tremendous all year. We knew his offensive capabilities right from the get-go. He had his opportunities and he played really well up front. Defensively, he had his issues, but he's much more reliable right now. So a terrific season for Mayu. And for now, I think he's looking for a place right at the beginning of coming Montreal next year. I think he will be an option for sure.
I'm going to put you on the spot now. Where do you project Rheinbacher for the Canadiens? Where do you project Mayu for the Canadiens? And when do you think they'll make the Montreal Canadiens full-time?
Tough question. I think it's a little quick to make assumptions on Rheinbacher. It's only been three games for him. But I really think they see him as their first right-shot defenseman eventually in the organization. I think he has the potential to be a first-pairing guy. And I see top four potential for Mayu as well, with a legit weapon on the right side on the power play. So if these two guys develop like I think they have the potential to be eventually, well, I think it looks really interesting for the Montreal Canadiens.
So on a Montreal Canadiens who have so much depth on defense, we talked about Rheinbacher. We talked about Mayu. We haven't talked about Lane Hutson yet. Obviously, there's Jack Guy. There's Struble. There's Barron. There's Mike Matheson. There's Caden Gooley. Savard's with the team right now, of course. I think he's going to be moved next year. Kovacevic. But Adam Engstrom in the organization. No one talks about William Trudeau. It would be hard to imagine him making the Canadiens because, once again, there's so many defensemen and only seven will make it. But is there a chance that William Trudeau could end up passing some of these guys?
It's going to be tough because he doesn't have the same season as he had last year. Just a little let down on my own when I see Trudeau's season. Lots of ups and downs. Consistency has been an issue for him. I see potential for the NHL, but can he do it on a regular basis? I'm not really sure with what I saw from him this year. I think he's going to play in the AHL again next year. And somewhere down the line, he's going to be waivers eligible. Will it be enough to force himself into a place in that stacked-looking lineup in Montreal defensively? It's going to be tough. But Trudeau is in the same boat as a lot of players that you just tell on air. Like, I mean, there's a lot of players, lots of options. And somewhere, really, in the next couple of months, couple of years, maybe, well, can't use, we'll have to decide where are we going. And which one do we want to keep in the organization? And which one can we maybe try to move to improve offensively? And it might be tough for the organization to move a few of them because I'm pretty sure they like it pretty much almost everyone right now because they've been that good.
Anthony, Pierre McGuire joined me about a week ago, and he was raving about Jacob Fowler, as many have. And obviously, we can see why after what he did again a couple of days ago, leading Boston College in a big win over Boston University with a highlight reel save that's gone around the world now. It's gone viral. But when he joined me, he said, if Fowler wins the championship, I would get him to Laval as of next season.
Mm-hmm.
And then... yeah, and when I asked him what his workload would be, he said he's willing to give him 75% of the starts. That's a lot of starts. Dobesh is 22 years old. Talk to me about Dobesh. Is he a number one? Is he a guy that can be in that mix with Montembeau and Caden Primo in a couple of years from now? Or no chance?
Well, he certainly has a chance. Because since the beginning of December, it was quite a turnaround for him. He's been one of the best goalies in the AHL since then. Like Pierre told you, he's been playing almost 70% of the games since the beginning of the year. One of the busiest goaltenders in the AHL right now. It's an important rookie season for him because he's pretty much taking everything that the organization is giving him. They started the season with two inexperienced goaltenders. It didn't work with Strassman. Dobesh started pretty much all over the place, but he found his game, and he's been reliable. And now they're going with him, and he has a veteran in Kazimierz Keskisuo, who has been an excellent second goalie for the organization, a good backup. They needed that kind of experience down there. But Dobesh, I don't know if it's because of Fowler, and he looks tremendous in the NCAA, that we don't talk about Dobesh. I don't know why, but the guy has been playing pro. He's been good. So I don't know why you should just move in away and don't think about him in the picture eventually, because he's been really good. I can't tell you anything different.
Anthony, this has been a treat. Final word, I'll leave it with you. Like, if Montreal Canadiens fans with the Laval Rocket, what's the one thing maybe they should be looking at or paying attention to over the next couple of days, next couple of games here?
Well, if the team is able to qualify in the playoffs, anything can happen. And they could be a real threat in the playoffs. I feel something special this weekend with the team. Everything is falling into place defensively. Offensively, they have legit weapons. We'll see about the Joshua Roy situation if he's able to come back for the playoffs. If they make it, watch out. It could be the story isn't over. I think it's going to be really interesting to see this team because in the North Division, I don't see the Rocket like inferior to Syracuse or Cleveland or Belleville, Toronto. Bring them all and see the best team that will go through. So it's short series in the AHL. Anything can happen.
Do you think they should send Struble down to the Rocket?
I don't know, actually. If Struble is still an important factor in Montreal, keep him there and send him back for the playoffs if they really want to. But for now, after three consecutive wins on the road, there's no rush. Guys have been playing good. And there's two AHL on AHL contracted defensemen, Toby Bissau and Olivier Galipeau. They've been playing their hearts out on the ice, blocking shot. I think Bissau is plus 16 and Galipeau plus 15 on a team that allowed goals all year. But these two have been the steady factor defensively. I mean, it's going to be tough. If Struble comes back, maybe they will scratch one of those too. But it's tough for a coach to go tell a legitimate defensive guy, well, I'm sorry, going to play the young guy that's coming back. It's a tough thing to do in the playoffs, in a team that is battling for a place in the playoffs.
I think Anthony Marcotte is one of the best voices in the city. I think Anthony Marcotte is one of the best voices in the province. And I think Anthony Marcotte has what it takes to be one of the best voices in the country. I value him that high. So if you haven't had a chance to hear him already, the way he calls hockey games is absolutely goosebumps. And you should hear him call boxing matches as well. Absolutely goosebumps as well. And you can listen to him on BPM Sport Radio. And you can see him every now and then on TV Sport on GC Show. Anthony, merci beaucoup. I really appreciate it. I would imagine there were a lot more exciting things to do on a Monday night at around 11 p.m. in Utica, but you took the time for me. I thank you very much.
No, there's nothing too exciting, but I would have went to bed before then, so for sure.
Thank you. What's the best restaurant in that neck of the woods?
There's the Ocean Blue restaurant just besides the hotel. If you ever go In Utica, it's the good place. It's on top of a building right downtown. Neat place. Excellent restaurant.
Amazing stuff. You were so exciting and interesting and informative that I can tell you that nobody watching went to bed, but you can now. Merci beaucoup, Anthony. Have a great night.
Thank you, Tony. I never know what to answer to your kind words, but I'll take it.
You know what? If I said it, it's because I mean it. All right? Or else I wouldn't have said anything. Merci beaucoup, mon ami.
Thank you, my friend. See ya.
Bye-bye. All right. There you have it. Marinaro, once again, special thanks to Energy Transportation Group. Special thanks to La Bitte TB. Special thanks to Playground. Special thanks to Accent Insurance Solutions. And special thanks to Manscaped. Special thanks to all of you as well. Don't forget to subscribe to our YouTube channel. Don't forget to subscribe to us on Facebook. Don't forget to subscribe to us on X. Retweet all of our stuff. Like it. Share it with your friends. Comment sick. And please leave us a 5-star review on Apple Reviews. It's our way of feeling the love. Habs and the Avalanche tomorrow night. Late start. There will be no show tomorrow. Enjoy the hockey game. I will be back Wednesday night. Same time. Same place. Tell your friends about it. It's the Sick Podcast. For Shane Gaumont and Master Control, I'm Marinaro. Me.
And that's a wrap. Hope you don't miss us too much until next time. Follow the Sick Podcast with Tony Marinaro on YouTube, Instagram, Facebook, Google Play, and Apple Podcasts. The Sick Podcast is brought to you by Energy Transportation Group. Driven to be different. La Vida TB. Embrace your true nature. And Playground, your premier gaming destination.